searching podcasts for The Daily Perspective. Okay, The Daily Perspective podcast coming up.
Hello there, and welcome in to a Friday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host for this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity. Hoping you're having a great day, your week has been a good one, and that you've got a good weekend ahead of you. And I also hope, as I always do on Fridays, that you will make part of your weekend unplugged. And I mean unplugged. Shut it all down. Shut off your social media. Shut off your access to email. Shut off your texts. Shut off everything. And just unplug from the world for a little while over the weekend. For as long as possible. Because if you do that, then Monday will roll back around and you'll have a different perspective about things. You'll have a real perspective about things. Especially after a week of being subjected to the idiocy that we've been subjected to this week with the Democrat convention. It's a sad day in America when these people can go on every night and just lie and lie and lie. But we'll get into that. Hopefully you had a good day yesterday. Our day was good yesterday. Actually, there wasn't much of a day yesterday. We had a lot of rain come into the area, so outdoor stuff was kind of out the door. We couldn't do that. And then what else is there? There's not much. Well, there are little things that I've been doing around the house, and I've been keeping up with that. But yesterday, wow, I gotta be honest with you. At one point when I got through working on things, I did some production work, I did some editing, I did some studio work. I piddled a bit with a few other things outside the studio, and then I sat down and the Nat Monster caught up with me, and I must have really needed it. I mentioned yesterday that I was out one day this week, just personally, because I needed to recover from a personal medical thing. And that's still ongoing from time to time. My strength is really low, and I just have to give in, because if I don't give in, then eventually it'll just make me. So I sit down, I take a nap. But yesterday was one of those days when I sat down and it said, "Okay, you're mine now." So I'm not dying. I don't think I'm going to get into the details of it. I mean, if you want to know, then direct message me, personal message me or something like that. Send me an email, mark@dailyperspectivepodcast.com, and I'll tell you. But it's not something I'm going to get into here, because honestly, I don't know when you're eating this, but when you're listening to this, because if you happen to be at mealtime, like you're on your lunch break, I don't want to mess up your lunch break. Let's just be, it's medical. I'm not going to sit here and do an organ recital, as they used to say about the old ladies on the porch comparing their surgeries. So I'm not going to do that. But it's just been, this happens once in a blue moon. And when it happens, I'm just kind of like, wow. No energy, no strength, no, you know, I'm just out of it for a few days. And I'm at the tail end of it, I hope. It is, it's a Friday. We're diving into a weekend. It's been a bizarre week with the Democrats lying to America at their convention. And life in America, life in the world is just kind of weird. Around the rest of the world, most other places are getting back to normal. And here in the United States, we're not. And we're not getting back to normal because there's a presidential election at hand. And the politicians have decided to politicize. They've decided to politicize COVID-19, the coronavirus. And in doing so, they're frightening a lot of people. I was watching a video, a YouTube video this morning. There's this guy. I jokingly refer to him to my wife, Jane. I tell Jane, yeah, I'm watching the juvenile delinquent. And it's a guy who has a YouTube channel, and he's actually making a great deal of money with his YouTube channel. And it's all about just him working on cars, right? He works. He has a couple of Miatas, which is what caught my interest, because our little fun car is a Miata, and I work on it from time to time. And so I started watching a handful of videos from people who have Miatas and what they're doing with Miatas, etc. And this guy, I refer to him as the juvenile delinquent because he actually was. He was in trouble with the law at one point and got caught. He had a couple of years of he had a couple of years of community service he had to do. And he now is, I guess you could call it, gainfully employed by producing YouTube videos every day. And I was watching him, and he was going on about traveling, because he is traveling. He's going back home. He's been away from home for a while, and he's going back there right now with a huge trailer, carrying a couple of his cars and all of his tools and all of his stuff, because he's going to go and drive his cars with old friends back home. And so he's got this ginormous trailer. He's pulling it behind this huge diesel pickup truck. And one of the things he talks about at one of his gas stops is that he's, oh, by the way, he's having to stop every couple, two and a half hours to fill this truck up. He's getting about 8 miles to the gallon. So if you're complaining about your gas mileage, just think, okay. So he's at one of his gas stops, he's complaining. Well, I'm complaining and getting a little preachy about how he's used to where he's been living. Everybody, everywhere they go, they're all wearing masks. They're because they're being cautious and they're doing what they're being told to do. And as he's traveled through some states in the Southeast on his way back home, he's noticed that nobody outdoors anywhere is wearing masks. And he's, you know, he talks about, hey, man, I really think the only way we're going to get rid of this thing is if everybody wears their mask. Well, you know, and I'm just thinking, you idiot. Well, for one thing, people wearing masks in certain places depends on what their state, county, city, you know, their area government has decided has to happen. That's what happens. It's a local thing. It's on a local level. So if your state doesn't tell you you have to mask up everywhere, you don't have to mask up everywhere. And if you choose not to, then you do. Then you don't. If you choose to, then fine. Go ahead and mask up. That's fine. But this guy is basing his personal opinion on what he sees in his daily life, where he lives, in the state he lives in. And in that particular state, they're very strict about mask wearing. And There's another. I've told you about this other couple who I watch, and nowadays, their videos, a lot of their videos center around fear about who's wearing a mask and who's not, and what places they can go into, and how close they can get to people, and if I buy food here, is there a place someplace beyond here where I can go sit away from a lot of people and actually take my mask off and eat it? And then they show the procedures they go to. They sit down, they hand sanitize, they take off their mask, they eat, they hand sanitize, they put a mask on back on again, and they go through this ritual of what they do. I watched a video yesterday of a young woman who does travel videos, and she was talking about driving from Texas, somewhere, I think she lives in Dallas, from Texas to Orlando. And she didn't fly. She wasn't going to fly. So she drove, and she stopped at and stayed in a hotel in Mobile, Alabama, a beautiful hotel, a historic hotel. And she described what she did to sanitize the room when she stopped and stayed for the night. And she didn't say how long it took, but I bet she spent the first hour at least in her room going over every inch of it and sanitizing everything. And that is just another sign of the fear. And the fear is coming from the media, the news media. The news media isn't telling us the truth. The news media isn't telling us, when they do tell us the truth, they don't tell us all of it. They tell just what suits their purposes. And as a result, stories like this happen. A mother and her six children were kicked off of a flight this week, a JetBlue flight. And yes, you're right. You're guessing. I bet it was because she didn't wear a mask. No, it wasn't because she wasn't wearing a mask. It was because her little 2-year-old girl refused to wear a mask. She's two. How many 2-year-olds do you know that will do what you tell them to do? Period. Not many. The mom says the experience was humiliating and traumatizing for her children, and her husband is threatening legal action. But JetBlue is standing by their decision. New York mom Chaya Brooke, she's 39, and her kids boarded the JetBlue plane in Florida headed to Newark on Wednesday when the flight crew told her her toddler must wear a face mask in order to travel. But Brooke explained that the girl, who had a pacifier in her mouth at the time, refused and pushed off her mask whenever she tried to put it on her. The Washington Examiner reports that video of the Wednesday interaction shows Brooke pleading with flight attendants to let her remain on the flight, with other passengers supporting her fight to keep the family on the plane. Other passengers on the plane were saying, hey, it's all right. She's two. She's not going to leave her mask on. She's two. After Brooke resisted leaving, the captain ordered every passenger to get off the plane. Brooke, her children, and other passengers who defended them were not allowed back on. That left the family stranded, as well as her defenders. Think about this. You're on a flight, something unreasonable is happening, and you say, hey, it's a 2-year-old. You've got to give a little bit of slack here. It's a 2-year-old. None of the research says she's transmitting any. This 2-year-old is transmitting anyway. It's extremely rare if it happens at all. I mean, she's two. She's not going to do what you tell. She's just going to take it back off again. And you get bumped off the flight as well, just for being reasonable. They were eventually able to catch a flight home 5 hours later on a United flight. Brooke later recalled to Fox News, she said, I'm not a confrontational person. I didn't want any trouble. I just wanted to get home with my 6 kids after a family vacation, and this put a damper on our experience. My kids started crying. They got scared. They didn't know what was going on. It was very traumatizing. Well, JetBlue, the corporate communications manager there, Derek Dombrowski, told the Fox News in a statement, during these unprecedented times, our first priority is to keep crew members and customers safe, and we've quickly introduced new safety policies and procedures throughout the pandemic. He notes that the airline's face covering policy was updated most recently on August 10th to ensure everyone is wearing a face covering, adults and children alike, to help prevent the spread of the coronavirus. The spokesman reiterates, quote, children age 2 and over must wear a face covering consistent with CDC guidelines, which says, what those guidelines say, masks should not be worn by children under the age of 2. But Brooke's husband pointed out to the Yeshiva World, it's another publication, that JetBlue's own website stated Wednesday that small children who are not able to maintain a face covering are exempt from the mandatory mask policy. The language on the website now reads, quote, all travelers 2 years and older must wear a face covering over their nose and mouth throughout their journey, including during check-in, boarding, while in flight, and deplaning. Mr. Brooks says he's hiring an attorney, and he plans to file a federal lawsuit against the airline over the incident. Good for him. I think he should. I don't know that he'll win, because I don't think he can afford the lawyer that JetBlue can, but I hope he does, and I hope he wins, because this kind of insanity has got to be stopped. 2-year-olds, can we have some common sense, please? Can we please engage our brains before setting policy? Can we please take at least one step back and look at corporate policy like this from a slight distance and compare it with reality? Because no parent with a brain will say, oh, sure, I can make my two-year-old wear a mask for the entirety of a flight from Florida to wherever I've got to go. If you believe that you can get a two-year-old to wear a face mask while boarding a plane, while being seated on a plane, during the flight, deplaning, if you believe you can get a two-year-old to actually cooperate and do that for the entirety of that experience, you don't have children. Or you drug your children to make them comply. And either way, you have no say in this matter whatsoever. And I don't think JetBlue should have a say either. And just between you and me, I don't think anybody should fly JetBlue until they change their policy. But don't hold your breath. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective Podcast for this Friday, the 21st day of August in the year 2020. Wow. There's so much. I'm looking at my list, and I have more stuff to talk about than I have time for. Plus, as I scan social media during my breaks here, I'm finding more. My buddy Joel, hi Joel, lives in Hawaii. I shared a story with him about him last week that he shared, the state of Hawaii is committing suicide. Okay, that's really the only way you can look at it. The governor is holding a gun to the state of Hawaii and is getting ready to just pull the trigger. It looks like they're going to go into another lockdown. And my buddy Joel is, the governor's name is Ige. His last name is Ige. And he was referring to him as Iceberg Ige, which I think is really funny. And he says it's because, one, he's frozen on decision-making. Two, he just drifts aimlessly like an iceberg does with tide and wind. And three, he's sunk the economy there, killing many, many businesses and hurting financially, spiritually, and mentally tens of thousands of island residents. And now he's adding number four. He's going to freeze people in place with a lockdown. And he said, and Joel says, to keep in mind, the governor is still going to live there next to Washington Palace. He'll keep collecting taxes. He'll keep his salary. He'll be eating well while he forces residents' incomes to zero and leaves others no choice but to get into food lines. It's just absolutely insane what this governor is doing. I read this morning earlier that they're looking at something called bubble quarantines, so that resorts... for example, let's say you want to go to Hawaii and you're going to be staying in a resort hotel in Hawaii. And now, because of the quarantine, because of what they're forcing, you get to Hawaii, you have to stay there and you have to stay in your hotel room. Very few exceptions to the rule. You can order out, and if you can't order out, then you can find a way to get food. But you can't go see the island. You can't experience Hawaii, which is why you went there. Right? You just can't. So now they're talking about bubble quarantines instead of in-room quarantines. They're talking about actually keeping you on the resort property. So let's say you're going to Disney's Aulani Resort. Well, you can stay on the property. You can go experience what there is to experience on the property at Aulani, but you can't go anywhere else. You can't go to a pineapple plantation, you can't go look at the volcanoes, you can't go to the other beaches, you can't go explore the metro areas, you can't do anything but see just the resort area. That's it. You're stuck in place for 2 weeks. Unless your vacation is, a month long, you are going to be looking at a hotel while you're there. It's actually no less ridiculous than the other one. The other thing, where you just have to stay in the room. It's just nuts. But that's progressive government. This is what they do. It's all about power and control. It's just amazing. Absolutely amazing. Now, we've been through this week. We've been through the DNC convention. It ended last night. That's right. Our long national nightmare has ended. It's over. Joe Biden wrapped things up last night with his acceptance speech. And he had another brain freeze. Yep. During the climax of his Democratic National Convention address. He told the audience that there has, quote, never been anything we've been able to accomplish when we've done it together. Yeah, that's not what was on the teleprompter. Trust me. He said the United States is facing four crises, which he's best equipped to fix after decades that he served in the Senate and the White House. Really? I'll come back to that. Those challenges are, in his words, the worst pandemic in over 100 years, the worst economic crisis since the Great Depression, the most compelling call for racial justice since the 1960s, and the undeniable realities and just accelerating threats of climate change. He emphatically promised victory and unity in the closing minutes of his speech, saying, I believe there's only one way forward as a united America, united in our pursuit of a more perfect union, united in our dreams of a better future for us and for our children, united in our determination to make the coming years bright. Are you ready? I believe we are. This is a great nation. We're a good and decent people. For Lord's sake, this is the United States of America. There's never been anything we've been able to accomplish that we've done when we've done it together. But according to the transcript as prepared for delivery, that line should have read, and there's never been anything we've been unable to accomplish when we've done it together. The prepared transcript shows Biden began to trip up a few lines before that, where he was supposed to say, as a united America, he skipped the word A, corrected himself, and repeated the line with the correct word in it. And the DNC shared the clip with an incorrect transcript. The transcript fixes the verbal fumble. He wrapped up by saying, this is our moment, this is our mission. May history be able to say that the end of this chapter of American darkness began here tonight as love and hope and light join in the battle for the soul of the nation. Well, you're right. This chapter of American darkness did end last night. And of course, I'm referring to the DNC convention, because that little chapter of American darkness was a doozy. If you watched any of it, you know that pretty much it was just the parade of lies. It was lie after lie after lie after lie. The misrepresentation of things happening in our nation. Person after person after person stepped before cameras and just lied to America about all manner of things, specifically Donald Trump. So what was on display this week during the DNC convention was basically TDS. It was wall-to-wall Trump derangement syndrome, and it didn't offer any real solutions. It didn't offer any plans. It didn't really offer any hope except that we should vote for Joe. Joe and Kamala. Remember, pronounce her name correctly. It's Kamala, not Kamala, not Kamala. It's Kamala, like the punctuation. Kamala, Kamala. Because if you mispronounce it, you're a racist. Yes, racist, if you mispronounce it. So please, please pronounce it properly, because remember, everything is racist, especially Democrat candidates. Now, let's get back to what I kind of chuckled about a while ago. Biden said the U.S. is facing four crises, which he is best equipped to fix after he has spent decades serving in the Senate and the White House. Joe Biden has been in our national government for almost 50 years, 47 years. He spent 47 years working in government, and he couldn't fix a bloody thing while he was there. And we expect that he could, these people, not we, I don't, anyone expects that he could fix anything now? Oh, he's just got to be president. No. Joe Biden is powerless to do anything. He's powerless to get out of his basement. He's powerless to actually make it through a scripted presentation, which he read from a teleprompter. remember, I recently reiterated this. I told you at the beginning when he declared that one of the things that they were going to be tasked with doing because Joe Biden was running for president was keeping him on his script. They were going to have at least one person, probably a team of people, whose job it is to keep Joe on the script. And I say on the script because we're not seeing Joe Biden's ideas here. We're not hearing Joe Biden's thoughts here. We're not experiencing Joe Biden because Joe Biden is not who's going to be running things if Joe Biden wins the presidential election. And it won't be Kamala Harris. Because in the event that he, in a weird, freakish, bizarre event that Joe Biden could win this election, it won't be long before he will make a public faux pas. That he will decide, hey, I'm the president. I don't have to do what these people tell me. I'm the boss. And he will venture off script and torpedo his presidency. And then someone will enact the 25th Amendment, remove him, and Kamala Harris will then be the puppet in chief. Because there are people behind the scenes on the Democrat side who are running things. Because in deep state politics, you have people who look good on camera, who sound good on camera, who make good public appearances, and then you have the people who actually set policy, the people who write those speeches, the people who coach the candidates, all behind the scenes. They're the ones actually running things. And that's how progressive politics works. The elite are the people behind the scenes. The elite are the people who are actually pushing the buttons and making things happen. They're not the people you see on camera. Please, please, go back and find video on YouTube, if you can, of Barack Obama's first term, especially his first year or two. And look for his public appearances. Look for when he speaks. Look for video. He never improvises. He reads every word from teleprompters. Welcome back. It's the Daily Perspective Podcast for a Friday, the 21st day of August 2020. Kind of looking back on the national nightmare that just ended last night, the Democrat convention. And I know I said yesterday I didn't want to talk about it, but doggone it, I have to talk about it because it was just so weird. Just, okay, here's an example of weird. I use the word weird, and I don't use it lightly because there was a panelist. There was a panelist Tuesday night. I'm sorry, I can't stop laughing at this. There was a panelist who identifies, and you know when I use the word identifies, it's about to get strange. There was a panelist who identifies as a Black Vietnamese transgender non-binary gender transcendent mermaid queen king. I'm out. You can't make this stuff up. I mean, seriously. I mean,
this sounds like it's gonna be hard.
Oh, it is gonna be hard.
What a bunch of crap.
It really is. She identifies as a Black Vietnamese transgender non-binary gender transcendent mermaid queen king. Tuesday night. It was during an LGBTQ caucus meeting, a panel, during which said mermaid person named Jemai, called for the total abolition of the police, ICE, and prisons. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your Democrat Party. Oh, this is. Jemai is apparently a licensed minister, believe it or not, in the Progressive National Baptist Church, because of course she is. According to her bio, she is busy, quote, living out her ever-evolving truths in North Carolina. And whatever it is, has a degree in sociology and women, gender, sexuality studies from Wake Forest. Listen, there is no such thing as evolving truth. Truth is truth. It is what it is. Truth does not evolve. Something evolving is deception. It is not truth. And this young woman is deeply deceived. Deeply deceived. You would have to be to believe that you are a black Vietnamese transgender non-binary gender transcendent. I'm sorry. Black Vietnamese transgender non-binary gender transcendent mermaid queen king. They only shot her from the waist up, so I don't know if she has a tail, so I can't confirm. But hey. You have to be deeply deceived. And you want to talk about lost. This poor soul is extremely lost. I'll include a link to her, to the video of the session in today's show notes. Please get the show notes. DailyPerspectivePodcast.com. That's where you got to go to get the show notes. And she's not the only person used by the DNC, and I use the word used because that's exactly what's happening. They are using people for their ends. There was a deported illegal alien. The Democrat National Convention used this week to attack President Trump. Turns out she was previously deported under Democrat President Bill Clinton. And she was also flagged under former Democrat President Barack Hussein Obama, to be deported after she illegally re-entered the United States of America. The Washington Times reports Alejandra Juarez first sneaked into the United States in 1998. She was caught at the border and deported back to Mexico. She quickly sneaked back into the U.S. That is a felony act. And remained in the shadows until a traffic stop in 2013, when she appeared on the radar of U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Experts said an Obama-era initiative expanding the use of local police fingerprint checks to aid deportations likely flagged Ms. Juarez for ICE. At that point, the Obama Homeland Security Department had a choice. It could have shown leniency, but instead reinstated her deportation order from 1998, putting her on the path to deportation that the Trump Homeland Security Department carried out in 2018. Democrats used Alejandra Juarez's daughter, 11-year-old Estela Juarez, as a weapon against the president during the DNC this week, when she read an emotional letter that tried to portray the president as a cold person who was ripping families apart. The video in which Democrats featured Estela Juarez also falsely misrepresented comments that Trump has made during his presidency. The video shows Trump making four comments on four separate occasions, and it makes it seem as though he was talking about illegal aliens. Those four comments were: one, we will begin moving them out day one. Two, these aren't people. Three, I don't want them in our country. And four, they're all animals. In each of those statements, Trump was referring to violent criminals, including the hyper-violent MS-13 street gang. He was not referring to people who were simply in the United States illegally. Here's the full context on each one of those statements. The first one, Trump said during a 2016 campaign event, quote, according to federal data, there are at least 2 million, think of it, criminal aliens now inside of our country. 2 million people, criminal aliens. We will begin moving them out day one. As soon as I take office, day one, in joint operation with local, state, and federal law enforcement. So, in context, it's clear crystal clear that President Trump was talking about criminals. Two, Trump made his "these aren't people" remark in response to a comment from a sheriff at a White House roundtable event on May 16th of 2018. That sheriff said, "There could be an MS-13 member I know about. If they don't reach a certain threshold, I cannot tell ICE about it." Trump responded by saying, "We have people coming into the country, or trying to come in, and we're stopping a lot of them, but we're talking about people out of the country. You wouldn't believe how bad these people are. These aren't people. These are animals. And we're talking about them out of the country at a level and at a rate that's never happened before. And because of the weak laws, they come in fast, we get them, we release them, we get them again, and we bring them out. It's crazy." Remember, he is in responding to a sheriff who was specifically talking about MS-13. That was the reference. The third one, Trump said on November 1st of 2018, quote, "There's nothing political about a caravan of thousands of people, and now others forming, pouring up into our country. We have no idea who they are. All we know is they're pretty tough people when they can blast through the Mexican military and Mexican police. They're pretty tough people. Even Mexico said, wow, these are tough people. I don't want them in our country. And women don't want them in our country. Women want security. Men don't want them in our country. But the women do not want them. Women want security. You look at what the women are looking for. They want to have security. They don't want to have these people in our country. And they're not going to be in our country. It's a very big thing." It's clear in context. He was talking about rough people, criminal people. And finally, the fourth one. Trump said during an August 2018 rally, quote, "Anything I want, they want to oppose. You know, I just figured out how to do the wall. I'll say I don't want to build a wall, and they'll insist on building it. I just figured out that out right now. So Bob Casey doesn't mind MS-13 coming in. These are the slicers. They slice people up. And remember, I called them animals, and Nancy Pelosi scolded me. How dare he call another human being an animal? They're animals." Direct, in context, reference to MS-13. Murderous, violent people. He referred to them as animals. But the DNC, during their event, this horrible national nightmare, which is finally over, is declaring that President Trump is talking about all Mexican people. And they're also confusing the issues. I watched it happen again this morning when I saw somebody talking about how, oh yeah, it was one of these people that you didn't see that happened during the daytime, because there's a lot of other stuff, the caucusing goes on in the daytime. It was a preacher, a black pastor, who referred to the Statue of Liberty in the New York Harbor, arms open wide, bring me your tired, your poor, and Trump is sending all of these poor people away, deporting people. Well, one, he ignores the fact that President Obama deported more people than any other president in U.S. history. That's a fact. Go look it up. And two, the plaque on the platform on the Statue of Liberty is not our national immigration policy. It's a poem. The poem was written as part of an effort to raise funds to build the base, the platform, the pedestal that the statue is standing on. It's not our national policy. It's a poem. It's a poem. And this guy, like all the rest of the Democrats you'll see talking to the media, is representing that poem as though it is our national policy. What they don't tell you is that our immigration policy is set for a reason the way it is. And that is actually out of compassion and kindness towards those coming in. Because there has to be a set process for coming into this country, so that if you're coming from somewhere else, you can assimilate and you can thrive here. Otherwise, you're going to have a tough time, as illegals are having a tough time. Did you know that at one point, in the 1920s, we suspended all immigration? Yeah. There was a massive influx of refugees in the late, between 18 and 20. We decided we had to stop immigration in order for all of those people to assimilate into our society so they could thrive. It's out of care for people. That's why. And here we go, jumping off into the final segment for this Friday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. By the way, I mentioned a few days ago, maybe one day last week, that we're looking at a time to unplug and escape. Looks like it's going to happen. So I'll give you more information later. But it looks like it's the first week of November. So just be aware, if you're a podcast subscriber that week, you're probably not going to get podcasts. I mean, I'm not packing the studio up and taking it with me. I'm just not going to do that. Oh, I'm just not. But we're looking at getting away. And if I can, I'll check in from time to time. Don't count on it. It's the 21st day of August. We got a weekend ahead of us. It's time to unplug and relax and enjoy your family and friends and try to be as normal as possible over the weekend, even if that's abnormal for you. And, one last story about the weirdness that was the Democrat convention this week. And I really have to tell you this story. I really do. John Kerry. You remember John Kerry. He actually ran for president. You remember, if you've been around long enough, you remember that he did run for president. Now, Donald Trump, according to the folks over at Herman Cain, by the way, Herman Cain's website is still up and running and his people are still on the go, even though Herman Cain has passed away. I just want you to know that. Donald Trump is sometimes skewered for surrounding himself with people of dubious character. That can be a fair criticism. But it's a mystery why this same charge isn't leveled against the 44th president. His cabinet included, among other people, the man who days ago tried to explore Herman Cain's death for blatant political purposes. It also included Hillary Clinton. I don't think we have to amplify that at all. It included John Kerry, a man who bragged about serving in Vietnam even as he turned around and slandered his fellow soldiers. Kerry also sold out the security of our allies in Israel for the purpose of appeasing the murderous mad mullahs in Iran. If you'd expect anyone to offer a litany of lies, anyone, during a political convention speech, John Kerry would be your man. And he didn't disappoint during his turn Tuesday night. The lies Kerry told need to be called out, because if people hear what he said and believe it, they'll come away with a completely distorted view of the world and the things that have happened over the course of the past decade. By the way, if you'd like to watch his speech, it's included in the story. Get the links today in the show notes. Let's look at some of the lowlights, shall we? He says they stopped the threat of a nuclear Iran. Now, these are some of the lies from his speech, okay? He says they stopped the threat of a nuclear Iran. They did no such thing. They gave Iran access to billions of dollars in exchange for empty promises Iran began violating almost immediately, even as the agreement made it virtually impossible for inspectors to catch Iran cheating. The Iran nuclear deal is one of the worst agreements the United States has ever made, and one of the least favorable to the United States and its allies, which is why it's classic John Kerry. He says they led a coalition of nations to stop ISIS. What he doesn't say is that ISIS only rose up in the first place because Obama abandoned Iraq in 2011 and left the nation undefended against the ISIS incursion. There never would have been a caliphate in the first place without that 2011 withdrawal. Also, ISIS wasn't defeated until Donald Trump went after them with complete abandon in 2017. Kerry says he stopped Ebola. He says they stopped Ebola before it became a pandemic. Ebola came to the United States from West Africa every bit as aggressively as COVID-19. but it was nowhere near as contagious as COVID-19. The steps the U.S. took in 2014 weren't that different from the initial steps against COVID, travel restrictions, widespread testing, so forth. But Ebola didn't spread nearly as quickly, and it wasn't passed from person to person without symptoms, in most cases. So you had to be symptomatic, so people would know, yeah, they got the Ebola, stay away from them. The truth is, the George W. Bush administration prepared a thorough plan for the U.S. to deal with a possible pandemic, and the Obama administration completely abandoned it. The Obama administration was lucky Ebola wasn't as deadly as it could have been. They did nothing all that brilliant to stop it. It simply wasn't the threat COVID is. Kerry says Trump inherited a more peaceful world and a growing economy, and that he bankrupted both. Those are completely false statements. Another word for that is lies. Trump inherited a world in which Iran was ascendant. They were on the rise. Syria was a dumpster fire. ISIS was on the rampage. And Russia had invaded Crimea. Obama and Kerry did nothing about any of this. And in the case of Iran, they intentionally caused the problem. Trump stopped ISIS, put unprecedented economic pressure on Iran, and sent military aid to help Ukraine battle Russia. His choices in Syria were not as praiseworthy, but they were better than Obama's, who declared the use of chemical weapons by Bashar Assad to be his red line, then did absolutely nothing when Assad used chemical weapons. As for a growing economy, Obama presided over the worst, the most sluggish post-recession recovery in history, with average growth a mere 1.9%. Trump signed the Tax Reform Act of 2017, which had the economy growing at a much healthier pace than Obama's until Democratic and a few Republican governors ordered statewide lockdowns in the spring of this year, and did so over Trump's objections. John Kerry knows all of this. He knows what really happened. But John Kerry lies as naturally as he opens his mouth. He slanders other people as easily as he breathes. The bullet this country dodged on Election Day 2004 is hard to overstate. Had John Kerry won, he may have been the worst human being ever to hold the office of president, exceeding Donald Trump's flaws by exponential measures. The fact that Kerry was on national television this week telling more lies is no surprise. It is what he does. The fact that media fact-checkers didn't pepper us with extensive pieces in response to Kerry's predictable nonsense tells you all you need to know about them. What you need to know about Kerry is plain as day for anyone who is paying attention. John Kerry always has been and always will be a bald-faced liar. He lies easily. He lies when the truth would do. And that's something we all need to remember. John Kerry is a progressive politician. The truth is foreign to him. And it's people like John Kerry in government that have created every problem this nation faces. And then they blame others for those problems and present programs to fix the problems they created in the first place. And their solutions, without exception, always make the problems bigger. And then more progressives follow behind them and make more proposals to fix the problems created by the progressives before them, and their solutions just make the problems larger. It is a pattern you can watch throughout progressive government history. Again and again and again, progressives create problems. Progressives propose solutions to problems. They blame the problems on other people besides themselves. They blame the problems on circumstances beyond their control. And then propose solutions which make the problem even worse. It happens again and again and again. And in many cases, their proposed solutions are just lies. They're just lies. We've been lied to for a long time. A lot. By a lot of people. And it's time to step outside of our comfort zone. I posted to social media yesterday about comfort, about how politicians have made us comfortable for a long time. We're used to the way they talk. We're used to statesmanship. But those statesmen have created all of the problems that we have. Those statesmen turn out to be incompetents in a nice suit with nice teeth and a good haircut. They speak a certain way, so we trust them because of their appearance and the way they talk, instead of looking into the realities. It's way past time to get real. And it's time to go. God bless you. Have a good one. 2 days off. How's that?